Okay, well, good morning, Council Tree Church. And it is so great to be with you this morning. And like Bert said, my name is Joe Kingery, and I am the pastoral apprentice here for the next year. And let me just say what a blessing it is to be here. I am really looking forward to our time together. I've already been extremely blessed in the couple of months that we've been here, but on behalf of Amanda and myself and our family, we are just unbelievably blessed by you, that you would invite me into this place where I could come and wrestle with some of my calling, and I could come alongside you as you do church here and now in northern Fort Collins, and we figure out and figure out what it looks like to do that really well, and you allow me to kind of poke around and ask hard questions. So I want to say thank you very much, and I want to say especially thank you to Bert for allowing this opportunity to preach and sharing this pulpit. I understand the significance of this moment, that this is an important role, and I don't take it lightly, and I want to thank you very much for allowing me the space to come up and to preach God's word. So with that, we're not going to waste any time. We're just going to get right to it because I've been up for a while and I've had a lot of coffee. So I hope you all are ready because we're going to be moving today. Today we are continuing our conversation about the Holy Fool. We've been in this series about what it means to be a holy fool, what it means to give your life to follow Jesus today, to follow ultimately God's mission in the world. What does that look like? There's this idea, it's this Latin term, and it's called the Missio Dei of God. And it's all about this mission that God is on, and he has been on this mission throughout time. And it is the mission to redeem his people. Man, it gets me choked up just thinking about it. But it is this unbelievable mission. And when we understand this mission that God is working out in among us through our history, right here, right now, today, we understand that we have an opportunity to be a holy fool. And we get to put our life and our purpose in line with God's purpose to redeem the world. And when we do that, that puts us in this really foolish position. It puts us in this position where we don't live according to the world's standards, where we don't live seeking affirmation in the world. We stand in this purpose of knowing that God is doing a great thing, and that this thing is he's redeeming all of humanity, and we get to participate with that. And that automatically puts us in this place that is foolishness to the world. So in this Holy Fool series, we've been talking a lot about like the Old Testament king of all the fools. We spent a lot of time talking about Moses. And Moses is like, it says in the Bible, it says he is the greatest prophet ever. And there'll never be another one like him. And he is like the greatest fool of the Old Testament. And it's been awesome to understand what that looks like for Moses. And today, we're going to talk about this story that's on the other side of the promised land journey for the Israelites. You see, Moses had this job, and he was bringing all the Israelites. He brought them out of captivity, and he brought them into the wilderness, and he prepared them for the promised land that God had promised. And he brought them through the wilderness, and he was successful. He didn't get to go with the Israelites into the promised land, but they went, and they made it. And they found that promised land. But what happened is that the Israelites weren't there very long, and they blew it. They lost track of God's ultimate mission, his Missio Dei, that he's working through the Israelite people to ultimately redeem the world, and they lost track of that. And they found their purpose in their position as living in this land. And it got so bad to the point where finally God had to remove the land from these people. He had to take them from this promise, and he had to pull them away for them to finally get it. So we're jumping in on the story where the Israelite people are back in the desert. They're back in the exile. And they're confused, and they're like purposeless. They don't know what's happening because they thought their purpose was to remain in this land, and they no longer have God's promise of being in that land. So today we're going to look at this awesome story, and it's the story of Esther. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story, but this is a great story. There is so much that's going on here. This is all about wisdom, and it's all about the history of the Israelite people. And there's so much going on. There's like humor all through this story. It is like an amazing story. And it's this story that God wrote all these thousands of years ago, and he wrote it for a purpose. Because ultimately, this story is about real people, written by real people, for real people, and it's ultimately a part of God's mission to redeem the world. And this story is crazy. It's got like ups and downs. It's got conflict. It's got trial. It's got all sorts of things. But unfortunately, we're not going to be here all day, so I don't have time to go through all 10 chapters of this unbelievable story. So my prayer for this congregation is that you would join me this following week for the next 7 days. We have a resource. It is the YouVersion Bible app. And this is what it looks like. Many of you probably have it on your phone already. This is a totally free resource. And the easiest way to get it is to just download it on your phone. And it comes with, I think, like a million translations. I don't know. There are so many. They're adding translations every day. But you can download this for free. And a part of the resources that are on that is they have all these reading plans. And there's a plan. It's called the Esther, I think it's the Esther Purpose Plan. And this is what it looks like. So Chosen with Esther. And it's 7-day devotional on God's calling. And over the next 7 days, we can go to this plan and we can meet God in this story and we can allow this story to speak to us. And we can become familiar with the ups and downs of what this story has to say. So I'd encourage you all to download that app, go and subscribe and follow this plan. And if you don't want to read the Bible on your story, you can just see what the text is and you can find it in your own Bible. But I would pray that you would do this for the next 7 days and let this story speak to you. Because this is how we make sense of the world, is through story. Is that God's telling a story. We all tell stories, and God is telling the best story. And this story has survived for thousands of years, and it has spoken to so many different people in so many different ways, and it wants to speak to you today. So I pray that you would make space for that as a congregation and allow that story to speak to you. And like I said, this is an amazing story, and it spoke to a ton of different people a ton of different way. But we have to understand that this story has not always been a great story for a lot of people. Throughout the history of interpretation, people have struggled with this story. Martin Luther himself is quoted as saying that he despises this story and he wishes it didn't exist. So if that doesn't like raise some alarm bells in you and say, man, what is that about? Like, maybe I shouldn't read this as just a flat story. There's got to be something going on here. Like, I don't know what will. Because people have been wrestling with this story, because it is the only book in the Bible that doesn't explicitly speak about God. There is no mention of Yahweh anywhere to be found. It is like one of the most secular stories in all of Scripture. And that really bothers people. And I would contend that this story is more pertinent today for us than maybe ever before. Because every day that we wake up here in America, we're waking up to a society that's becoming more and more and more secularized. And the name of God is becoming this distant memory every day. So I would contend that today is maybe that the day that Esther's story will speak loudest in our lives. So with that, we're going to jump straight into the text. We don't have time to go through the whole thing, but we're going to start at what is probably it's definitely the most recognizable verse within the entire story. And it's one of those verses that, like, if you spend any time in the church, like, you come to understand or recognize this verse. But sometimes we don't necessarily understand the context. But we're going to start with this super powerful verse that has been so important to the formation of Christianity for so many years. And this is where we're going to jump off. And it's found in chapter 4, verse 14. And it says, "Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for such a time as this." I'm sure many of you recognized that verse. And what's important here is that we have to understand what's going on. Is that this is a conversation that's taking place between two characters, two primary Jewish characters in this story. These are the words of Mordecai, and he's known as Mordecai the Jew in this super secular society where there's no mention of God. Mordecai has like this name tag, and it's Mordecai the Jew. So there's no mistaking who Mordecai is. And Mordecai is talking to Esther, who is like his surrogate kind of daughter. They're actually second cousins, but he ended up like adopting her because she was an orphan, and she comes under his tutelage. So he's addressing Esther, who has risen to prominence as queen of Persia. And he's having what I like to call, this is called a Mordecai moment. And I think it's super important because I think a lot of us have these moments all the time. And it's important that we understand that in this story of Esther, that it's like a roller coaster. There's all these things going on. But there's this fabric, there's this thing that's woven between all the characteristics of the story. In all the wisdom and all the literature, there's this underlying idea of irony. Like God works through this story. His mission to redeem the world is cloaked in irony. And irony is defined as a state of affairs or event that seems deliberately contrary to what one expects. So I don't know about you, but I feel like that is so important. And that speaks to my faith journey. That I try to get all my ducks in a row, and I'm like, this is how I'm going to follow God. This is what it's going to look like. I'm going to be obedient. I'm going to do these things. I'm going to go to seminary. It's going to be great. And then all of a sudden, you get to the end. I'm at the end of seminary, and I'm like, how did I get here? I had no idea. And God starts using our ambitions and our desires, and in his godly way, he works them out in this upside down kingdom way that is cloaked in irony. And we don't just see this in a pursuit with God. We see this in all sorts of things. Where maybe you're like, I'm pursuing that next job, that next step in my career because I want more time with my kids. And you get that promotion, and all of a sudden you understand that promotion comes with a lot of responsibility and a lot more time at work. And all of a sudden, you're not spending as much time at home with your kids like you had anticipated. And you're standing here, you're like, how did I thought that getting this promotion would get me here. And it's not at all what you expected. And throughout the story, this secular story, God is so present. His mission is so present, and it's mostly present in these ironical situations that play out over and over and over again in this story. So we have to understand that where there is irony, that is where God is probably moving the most. So if we take a closer look at this verse, this is where we're going to start, and we have this conversation going between Mordecai and Esther. And we have to understand, we have to kind of pull back and get a bigger view of this story of who Mordecai and Esther actually are. So we've kind of talked about Mordecai a little bit, so we're going to hone in on Esther. And Esther is this woman who is an orphan, who has grown up in Persia, and she's a Jew. So within like the ancient Near East, she's a woman. That's strike one. She's an orphan. That's strike two. and she's Jewish. That is strike three. She is like on the very, 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 very margin of society. She is like the last person you would ever bet that God would say, that's the person I'm going to use to fulfill my mission and to save my people. That's irony. She is like the least of all the people. And we find her in this story. She has one thing going for her. She's like extremely beautiful, which helps. So we find her in this story. She's living in Persia, in the capital city of Persia, which is Susa. So if you took like all of these major cities that we know today, New York, Paris, London, Las Vegas, and you like stirred them all up, you would get Susa. It is like this hub of the Persian Empire that is ruling the world. It's where the king resides, and there is like abundance. The opening chapter talks about how there's like, they throw a 180-day party to celebrate that they're Persians, and then that party comes to an end. So what do? They like celebrate the end of their party by throwing another party. Like, it is this culture of like abundance. And there is so much going on. But what's interesting is that the king finds himself in need of a queen. This queen kind of she absolutely disobeyed King Xerxes, and she was removed from her position. And King Xerxes is like on the hunt to find a new king. So what is the most appropriate way to do that? If you're like Persia and you have all these resources and power, you throw a beauty pageant, right? That's what we do. That like that's the most efficient way to find the queen. I don't think so. And you sit and you're like, this is irony. This is crazy. Who are these people? But then you sit and you go, it's almost like they have like a reality TV star as their president. And you're like, oh wait, maybe this isn't such a big leap. Maybe we have more in common than I actually thought. Because these are real stories about real people written for us. And it's written under the divine hand and inspiration of God. So we see that this just this crazy Persian mess that Esther has found herself to be a part of. And she enters this beauty pageant. And then over here, we have her uncle, her kind of surrogate second cousin uncle. Just trust me, they're more uncles than second cousins. And over here we have Mordecai the Jew. He's walking around with this name tag. He is like Jewish. Nobody can mistake him. And in chapter 2, he goes to Esther and she's like going on this pursuit to be the queen. And she's entering this beauty pageant. And he says, hey, Esther, like good luck. I hope it goes well. Before you go, real quick, don't tell anyone you're Jewish. What? What is that? I don't know. I think of it as like, I have these three girls, and I want them to grow up to know and trust Jesus. And I want them to like be dedicated to following Jesus. And like, when I drop them off at college someday, I hope, the last thing I'm going to say is like, hey, you're going to do great. You know, say we're like at Arizona State University. Hey, you're going to do great. Like, but don't tell anyone you follow Jesus. Good luck. I hope it goes really well. Like, what is Mordecai thinking? And then here's the crazy part is like Esther, who has grown up in this Jewish household, does it. She hides her Jewishness. She does what Mordecai says, and she hides her Jewishness, and she keeps it a secret, and she becomes queen. She wins over the heart of the king, and she becomes queen. So she hides who she really is. She hides this understanding of her Jewishness and what that means about the mission of God and the Jewish people and all these super important things. And she like puts it in her back pocket. But she becomes the queen. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Because then on the other side of this conversation, we have Mordecai, who's Mordecai the Jew. And he has a job. His job is he works at the Persian government, but it says he sits at the gate of the palace. So he's like kind of involved in the Persian government, but not really. He's like the equivalent of The best way I can describe it is probably he's like TSA for the Persian government. Like, he could make you like take your shoes off before you come in and like take your laptop out, but like that's probably the extent of what he can do. He can't really enforce anything, but he can like kind of wreck your day. So he sits at the gate, right? And he is Mordecai the Jew. And we know that he's Jewish, and he sees people come in and out, in and out. And one of the people that he watches come in and out is this other character that we have to talk about. And it's this character who is the king's right-hand man. And his name is Haman. And he is King Xerxes, like, he's risen to this power, and he is, like, pretty much in control of the kingdom. He has risen to this place where he is, like, he's writing all these laws and these rules, and he's kind of, like, dictating his will. And he encompasses all that it is to be Persian. He is all about himself. He's all about getting power, prestige. And most importantly, he's about letting people know how awesome he is. It's so crazy that he even writes this edict on behalf of the king that says, wherever Haman goes in the whole empire, people have to bow to him. Like, the guy's pretty narcissistic. And so he's coming in and out of this gate all the time because he's second in control. And he comes by Mordecai. And the rule is that you have to bow. Well, Mordecai is the Jew. He is like the stereotypical like Jew in exile. This is the story of like Daniel who gets thrown into the lion's den. This is like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who get thrown into the furnace. Like, this is what a Jewish person is supposed to do. They are supposed to be obedient to God. You're supposed to know that they're Jewish, and they're not supposed to like bend a knee to any other foreign god. So here comes Haman back and forth, and Mordecai doesn't bow to him. And it drives Haman crazy. It drives him so crazy that he actually writes another edict. And he says, yeah, you know that guy Mordecai? Like, I would like him dead. But I don't just want Mordecai dead. I want all the Jewish people in Persia dead. Because there are these disobedient people that won't bend a knee to me, and like they need to be stopped. So now we have Mordecai the Jew who's sitting in the gate of the palace, who's doing what he thinks he should be doing. He's doing what like the typical Jew in exile should be doing. He's staying obedient to God. He remembers the story. He remembers his purpose. He remembers the mission that God is unfolding. And he's not bowing to Haman. And look at what happens. He sees this edict come down that is like all about his demise and his destruction. But even more, it's about the destruction of the Jewish people. And this is a huge deal. So on one side, we have Mordecai the Jew doing what he's supposed to do. And he's in this place of turmoil and trouble. And over here we have Esther, who's kind of put God in her back pocket and has hidden her faith away, and she has rose to prominence. And it doesn't make any sense. It should be the other way around. It should be Mordecai should be getting saved and prominence, and his obedience should be rewarded, and Esther should be punished for not putting God first and foremost as she goes and seeks this queenship. But that's not the way that God is working it out. This is like the ironic way that God is going to work out his mission. So Mordecai hears this edict happen, and he does the appropriate thing, what a Jew should do. He like goes into this state of mourning. He rips his clothes and he puts on sackcloth, and he's sitting in the gate and he's heartbroken and he's crying out to God, and he's like, when people go into mourning, these Jewish people, they're like interceding, like asking God to remember them and to do something on their behalf. And then you have Esther, who's still in the palace, and she sees Mordecai, and she's like, what is going on? She lives in the palace, but she's like become so detached from her people that she doesn't even understand this edict that's been written. She doesn't understand what's happening. She has no idea, because she's put all of her purpose in her position as this Persian queen. She's lost track. And see, sometimes we start making decisions in life where we're like, hey, you know, I'm just going to put God God, you're with me, but I'm going to kind of put you back here because I really want to get this job, or I think maybe I should get this house, or maybe this is what we should do with our kids. And you kind of start putting God in your back pocket long enough that you forget that he's there. And you start thinking that you're calling your own shots, that you're responsible for the position you find yourself in. And that's what's happened to Esther, because she responds, she sends her this servant girl to go and talk to Mordecai. And Mordecai fills her in, and they're kind of playing this game of like telephone. And they send this servant girl back, and the servant girl tells Esther what's going on. And Esther says, hey, well, just give him some clothes. Tell him to put these on, and it'll be fine. Because I'm the queen. Like, it'll be fine. Just dust yourself off, and let's get back to living life in Persia, because it'll be fine. I'm the most powerful woman in the world. I will protect you. She's lost track of what it means to be a Jewish woman in Persia, or just a Jew in Persia in general. And Mordecai returns back to Esther with this response. And before, this is 14, chapter 4, verse 14b. And before that, he says, hey, Esther, don't think that like just because you're queen that like you're going to be safe from what's about to happen. But he says, but don't you forget that like who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for this specific time. And what's so interesting is this is the culmination of the Mordecai moment. Mordecai remembered who he was, but Esther had kind of lost track. And she had gotten so involved and enveloped in being the queen that she had forgot who she was. And this is where we see Esther truly become the holy fool. When she's faced with this Mordecai moment who says, hey, like, I don't know how we got here. Like, I'm trying to be obedient to God. It seems like you've kind of forgot about God. And here we are facing annihilation. But who knows, Esther? Maybe, just maybe, this is the way in which the providence of God is working out in our lives. And it's not about how you got here, but it's about the fact that you are here, right now. And he challenges her. He says, maybe you were born just for this time. And she has this decision to make. Is she going to listen to Mordecai? Or is she going to continue to put her trust in her position as the queen of Persia? And I think a lot of us come to this same Mordecai moment where we believe that we've gotten somewhere, that maybe we're somebody. And we forget that God is doing this great work in and through the world. And we put too much emphasis on our position and we lose track of our purpose, which is ultimately found in aligning our lives with the mission of God, the missio Dei. That we as human beings find our ultimate purpose when we align our purpose with God's purpose. And that's what Mordecai is doing. And that's what Mordecai is doing right now. He's asking all of us, right here, right now, is where are you finding your purpose? Are you finding it in your position? Because guess what? Positions for the rest of your life will come and go. Maybe right now you're like, man, if I can just finish the last 5 years of my job, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to retire. And it's going to be great. And then you get to retirement and it's not at all what you thought it was going to be. And all of a sudden being retired is your position, but that is not where you find your purpose. Or maybe it's starting this new job. If I can just get this job, that's a promotion. You get it and you're still floundering. And you're saying, this is not it. It is when we align our purpose with God's purpose. And that is what Esther does, and this is where she becomes a holy fool. She responds to Mordecai, and she says to her servant, she says, go tell Mordecai to fast and pray for me. Because in 3 days, I'm going to go to the king. And she responds in this overly Jewish response of like, what would be appropriate? Finally, it's this Jewish response where that leads the way for her, where she is like, I'm going to fast, and I'm going to find provision from the king, from God, when I go to the king. And see, she knew in that time, you don't just walk into the king's palace. You don't just walk up on King Xerxes. There was this procedure. And if you weren't called into Xerxes' presence and he didn't want to see you, he wouldn't just dismiss you. He would take your life. So if you walked into the presence of the king and he didn't want to see you, it's over. Just like that. So we have this queen who has everything. She went from nothing to something, and she has it all. And in this Mordecai moment, God is asking her to align her life with his purpose. Find her purpose in his purpose. And she does, and she realizes that there are no riches, there are no position. There's nothing in this world that would be worth missing the opportunity to align our lives with God's mission and living a life that is dedicated to seeing God's salvation come to humanity. And she goes and she approaches the king, and the king accepts her. And over a series of events, you're going to have to read it through the week, like a lot of stuff takes place, but eventually Haman is deposed and he loses his life because the king like sides with Esther and with Mordecai. And it's so crazy that Haman loses everything, and Xerxes promotes the TSA guy sitting at the gate to the second in command. So now you have two Jewish people in exile who are like two of the most powerful, prominent people in all of the land. That is God's irony. That is how he works it out. It is never the way that we think it's supposed to go. And you might be saying, Joe, that's awesome for Esther, but I'm not called to be a Persian queen. And you're right. Like, we're not called to be Esther in the fact that we're not Persian kings and queens. But what's amazing, and this is ultimately the foolishness of God, is that it's the same redemptive story that God is telling, that he was telling to Esther, and he's telling it to us as well. It is unfolding right before our eyes, here, now, for such a time as this. You were born and you were placed here to align your life with the same foolish purpose that Moses got to be a part of, that Esther got to be a part of, that we get to be a part of. And we get to be a part of this mission through a relationship with Jesus Christ, God's ultimate linchpin plan to save humanity. It's found in a relationship with Jesus Christ, and that is where we find ourselves in history, right now, right here, is that we get to give our lives to Jesus, and Jesus saves us. He saves us from our sins and our separation from God. He brings us back into that right way of living, but he does so much more. That's only half of it. If you stop there, you've missed it. He saves us from death and sin, but he saves us to a life of purpose. And it's a life of purpose to dedicating our life and our purpose to the purpose of Jesus. And that is bringing a life-changing message to a secular world that has lost its way, to a world that is so thirsty and hungry and searching for truth. It is our job as image bearers of truth that we get to step into this time in history and we get to align our lives with this ultimate missio Dei of God, which is known to us through a relationship with Jesus. So I want to invite the band up as I start to close here. And maybe during this time, during this Mordecai moment for you, you've felt this rumbling in your spirit. And you've been living this life saying like, man, I have been so depleted. I've been trying to find purpose in all of my positions. And I keep coming up empty time after time after time. Well, I want to invite you into a relationship with Jesus, because ultimately it's in a relationship with Jesus that you will find that purpose. And if you've never had that, now may be your Mordecai moment. And we're going to turn to the time of worship. But we're going to have people in the back to pray and people up here in the front to pray. And if you are looking for an opportunity to ask Jesus into your life, I would say now is the time. And there are people that would love to pray with you and introduce you to Jesus right here, right now. And maybe that's not you. Maybe you have been the person that has kept Jesus in your back pocket for a while. And you've lost track of where you've been. And it's time to put Jesus out in front. And if you want prayer, you can come up and we would be glad to pray for you as well. Because now is your time to realign your purpose with God's purpose. Or maybe you're like Mordecai and you've been living this life following God and it's been so hard. And it's not going the way that you thought it would because this is difficult. It's called being human. But I want to assure you that when you keep your purpose aligned with God's purpose, that He is good, that He loves you, and that He's got a plan for you, and He's got hope, and He's got a future for you. And maybe that's where you're at today. And if that's where you're at, there are people that would love to pray for you. And I pray that you would hold on to that relationship with Jesus. Because who knows? Maybe you were brought here for such a time as this. Right here, right now.